and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
All right. Welcome back to My Alchemical Bromance. This is Eric Arneson, and I'm here at Ruse Brewery with Alex Bolin, who is the host of the Alex Cast, which is the longest-running Alex-themed podcast in the universe. And he's also an author. He wrote a book called Periphery. It's a novel. He's written some short stories, and he's written some other stuff. And I know that writing is really important to him because he talks about it all the time. And I think he might be like a tortured author. Do you consider yourself a tortured author sometimes?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm tortured and an author. That's more the order of operations, you know. If this is programming language, first comes torture, then yeah.
So you're tortured first and an author second, so it's...
Yeah, I suppose so.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what would happen if I stopped being tortured. I mean, I might still write, but I think it'd probably be terrible.
Yeah. Well, so I'm going to talk a little bit about this place we're at. Ruse Brewing, it's brand new. Like, last week I was walking by this place on the way to some event I was going to, and when I was walking up, I noticed this really cool, like, Egyptian-themed artwork on the wall of this business. I had no idea what it was, and I looked inside, and it was a brewery, and they were like, oh, our grand opening is in 5 minutes, so I came in and got a beer from them right when they did the grand opening. So now it's their, I guess this is their second week that they've been open.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you got one of their beers. You got the...
I got the Translator IPA.
Translator IPA. Yeah. What do you think of it so far?
I quite like it, yeah. It's the style of IPA I was looking for.
It's mild, huh? It's like not...
Yeah, I went through... I think everybody does this when they get into microbrews, that I went through that the more hops, the better thing. Like, just pound my tongue with hops, and I just get so tired of it. Now I just want, like... I'm actually more like a pale ale person. Like, not even like the... No more dry hops. Like, but this is good. Like, I like the lower, what's it, with international bitterness unit, is that the
IBUs,
phrase?
Yeah,
yeah. I need less IBU.
what is it? It's like standard. There's a measurement of the color of a beer, which is something like SDR or something, and the name of the name that the acronym translates into is something like standard measurement unit or something like that, where you see it and you're like, this doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But it's a way of measuring the darkness of a liquid or the darkness of a substance based on how, like, light is absorbed and retransmitted at a specific frequency or specific wavelength. It's super nerdy.
So it's probably, I'm going to guess it means spectrum density something.
That might be better.
Yeah.
I don't think it does. I really can't. I was looking at it and I couldn't figure out what the acronym would stand for. So I looked it up on Wikipedia, and when I saw what it translated into, I was like, this is the dumbest name ever for a unit.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's not very memorable.
No. Yeah. All right. So I got a taster tray, and this first beer that I'm going to taste is a collaboration between Ruse and Allegory Brewing called Keller Pils. And Keller is a German word that means cellar.
Yeah. I'm surprised you can remember that.
Oh, that's... Here, you want to try that?
Sure.
That's like probably the best summer beer I've had in a while. It's got kind of a fruity note to it, but it's mostly just, like, unassuming and thirst-quenching.
Yeah, no, that's totally, like, really light. Yeah, if I were sweaty and in the need of beer, this would be a delightful thing to throw down my face.
Yeah. All right, so you have been using mushrooms to microdose to deal with depression, or something like depression?
Depression, I've been diagnosed as severe treatment-resistant depressive.
What does that even mean?
Yeah,
the treatment-resistive part, is that like...
It basically just means you've tried a whole bunch of crap and they add other words to your diagnosis. I mean, honestly, that's what it means. I don't remember the exact terminology, but basically there's, you know, kind of low-level depression where, you know, you get the blues every now and again, and then you get to the point where you need medication, and that's a certain level, and then treatment resistant is basically where medication's having a tough time, therapy has a tough time, et cetera, et cetera. Like it's just another kind of qualification they add. I think there's certain kind of implications that go along with it. Like, I'm pretty sure I could go on, like, disability, which I'm not remotely close to that, but I think, or maybe there's one level above that, you know, not to sound so, like, ooh, this is levels, like Mega Man or something, but...
Well, how do you level up? Do you have to, like, defeat a boss, or does the boss have to defeat you?
Well, I think the boss defeats you, yeah. The boss shadow that lives in my brain.
Oh.
But, the microdosing mushrooms has been the only thing that remotely touched it. Like, on a... Like, I've taken, pharmaceutical antidepressants before, and they help for a bit, and then kind of stop working, which is kind of... This is where the treatment-resistant part comes in. And, but yeah, mushrooms was the first time that... Microdosing them was the first time I was... to use the really corny phrase of, oh, I felt like me again. I forgot what this feels like, which is a thing a lot of depressed people know that feeling if they ever get through it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that translates to people that haven't dealt with this, but hopefully it does.
I mean, I think I can imagine it. I think I can imagine how that must feel. It's hard to... Yeah, but you're right. Like, people who haven't gone through it, like, that, you know, I can only understand it the way you describe it. Probably.
Well, I heard this great thing. This is very recently. I heard this phrase. It's like, oh man, I wish I heard this years ago. It's like, depression is the feeling of wanting, just wanting to go home, but you have no idea where home is. It's just like, and I was like, oh, that's perfect. Because everybody has a feeling of, oh man, I just want to go home. But it's like, I could have that feeling in my house where it's just like, I don't have, you know, there's no home to go to.
Yeah. Well, look. So then how do you, how does the microdosing work? Like, what's the process you go through? Like, you get psilocybin mushrooms.
Yeah.
And then what?
So there's a protocol by, oh, I'm going to forget the guy's name. So I'm just going to say there's the standard protocol that if you look into it, it shows up everywhere. It's like the Fineman protocol or something like that. But what you do is you grind up the psilocybin mushrooms after they've been dried. Cracker dry, as the phrase is.
Okay.
You grind it up really thin, and then so mix it up so everything is completely equal dosing. And then it's you usually start at 1 microgram, so like 1 microgram. Yeah, microgram. So
of mushroom.
Yeah. So basically,
wow, that's like.
I think sorry, 10 micrograms. I'm so bad at math. Okay, let me put it this way. If you put a gram on the scale, 0.1.
That's, okay, so a tenth of a gram.
A tenth of a gram. Sorry, okay. I'm wretched
that's
at
math.
That's
not even micrograms.
Yes.
There's like 1,000 micrograms in a gram.
Yeah, yes. So, the problem is they call it microdosing, and then that screws my math up, because I'm good with...
So it's 100 micrograms. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So 0.1 gram.
I wish math and look up the protocol. Anyway, the point is...
Okay, but it's about 0.1 grams.
Yeah.
You...
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because, yeah, it's 0.1 grams is where you start. I was taking 0.25.
Mm-hmm.
And every 3 days you take it. So it's one day...
So it's not even every day.
No, you take a pill, one day on, 2 days off.
Okay.
And the point is you aren't supposed to feel it.
Hmm.
Like, there's no... I've heard of the phrase. I keep wanting to say subliminal, but it's... sub-perceptual dose.
Okay.
Where you won't notice it except for maybe, again, that to go back to that metaphor, you might start feeling like you know where home is for a second. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of, if you don't feel things, it's that you feel the absence of things. So, like, if depression is a cloud, you know, it's, you'll notice, like, oh, there's slight bits of sun coming through. And I know this is the cheesiest metaphor ever, but
I've seen this on a commercial for antidepressant before.
It's awful, but I mean,
But I mean, if it's a metaphor that works, well, you know, I mean...
And advertisers are, I mean, literally our most brilliant minds in the world write advertising, and our most brilliant writers do jingles.
Advertisers are black magicians. We all know this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a... yes, we
wizards.
Do. Yeah. I'm glad about a show that I just say that without having to explain it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so every 3 days. And the point is, so you don't get... you don't build up a tolerance to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I did mine...
Oh, so that's why you do it every few days.
Yeah.
Right.
And
okay.
So the idea is, like, they say, like, the dosing is... It's not how you feel on the day you dose. It's how you feel 2 days later.
Huh.
And after, like, one kind of round of protocol, which is the one I read is 30 days, so 10 doses, I'm not using this word, I don't use this word loosely. It was miraculous. Like, it was something that I had given up all hope ever of knowing that feeling again of like, oh, this is like what it's like to be me, like without this, like without, like, it's, I mean, it's literally like, you know, the millstone on your back. It's just shrugging it off. It's like, oh, wow, I forgot what standing up straight feels like. I forgot what, you know, like if you ever carried a heavy backpack and take it off, you feel like you can spring 40 feet in the air.
Two episodes ago.
Oh, yes. So, oh, yeah, you did a camping trip. Yeah,
so I totally know that. So that's got to be,
it
sounds interesting.
I'm
so
literally
it's really
getting
like,
chills on my arms, remembering. Yeah. Like,
and it's worked better than any pharmaceutical you've tried, any commercial pharmaceutical.
It felt like me again. Pharmaceuticals felt like, and they're very effective. I'm not shitting pharmaceuticals. A lot of people that find alternate healing methods say like, oh, pharmaceuticals ruin your brain or whatever weird theory they have. If it helps you get rid of depression, boy, take it. Because depression's like literally, it's the worst thing that could happen. Because you don't feel good anymore. There's very few things like, I mean, not that I want this choice, but were a deity to come down and say, hey, here's your choice. You have no depression and you have cancer. You've got 40% chance of survival. I would take it in a second. I'd take the cancer. Because at least you have a chance of enjoying. It's the phrase is anhedonia, just no joy. It's pointless. We've referenced, I think, before we started that kind of Greek idea of the afterlife, you know, the Hades form, where
like
just,
the Hades,
you're a shade
just
of yourself.
A shade, yeah.
That's what it is. You're just walking around as a shade, and you're like scraping the bottom of a bucket to get any joy out of you. You know,
The miraculous part of it sounds awesome. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's great. The only downside is there's some small evidence of, and they did this is more reference to heavy LSD usage, that there's some small evidence that there's I forget what the actual thing is, but basically there can be some heart damage.
From LSD usage?
From a lot of LSD usage. Like, because there hasn't been studies on LSD since Tim Leary ruined it for everybody, you know, back in the...
It was the government that ruined it.
No, it was him. If he would just shut his mouth, I would have had this medicine in high school if that asshole didn't do the whole tune-in, drop-out, hate the government thing. Because they had protocols. It was in labs.
Okay, that's a good point.
We would have been okay.
But like, at the same time, the
anger I feel at that man, because I've decades of my life has been either ruined or severely awkward made because that dude just couldn't shut up. Hate him. He's on my top 10 of people I would like to kick in the shin.
You know, I don't know enough about Timothy Leary to even try to defend him or refute that, so I'm okay just sort of hating him for an hour at least.
Yeah, go for it.
And then I'm gonna go look this up, because I think that there's a lot of stuff going. It was a politically tumultuous time.
No, of course.
And I suspect that LSD would have been illegal.
No, but
regardless.
LSD wouldn't have gotten popular. It's him walking down the street banging on a garbage tin going, take this stuff, go in a field and dance to music, where in laboratory settings, it's showing signs of, well, they didn't call it PTSD back then, but like showing signs of helping shell shock, showing signs of helping migraine, which is why they developed the thing in the first place.
Yeah.
Like showing signs of helping with depression, even though they barely knew depression back then. Like, I mean, not that they knew, you get what I'm saying. The medical science, you know, they weren't nearly as advanced as we are now in, like, you know, recognition of the you know, disease, if you want to use that word, which I like to use because
it makes sense.
Well,
dis-ease, you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, people actually had this really upsetting argument last night where a friend of mine admitted to me whilst she was rather drunk, so I'm going to think about forgiving her, where she admitted that she doesn't believe in depression. And
who
that
doesn't
we,
believe in depression?
Well, her. She said, I chose it.
You chose it?
I chose this.
Oh.
Like, I was like, I don't even know how to, I mean, I was shocked. I didn't know how to respond to that, which is not a situation I find myself in often.
Yeah. So what does that mean? You can just turn it off? Like, you've got like some sort of depression switch?
I guess. I mean, because boy, would I like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it reminded me of those people that think like, oh, you choose to be gay, where it's like, nah, I'm pretty sure, like, you know, like 1950s America, very few people go, you know what I want to do? Is I want to be ostracized horrifically every day, all day, and have to hide the thing I love. That sounds great.
Yeah.
I'm going to tick that box. Yeah, I'm going to tick the, it's, I laid in bed today until I forced myself out because I had to meet Eric for this podcast. Yeah, that's great. I'm glad I did that on a Saturday. I'm sure I made that choice.
Okay, I'm going to talk about another beer now. We've got like a bunch more to go through. So they've got, like, Ruse doesn't do... They've got a couple really standard beers. You know, they've got, like, two IPAs on tap and a Northwest Pale Ale and Oh, Lost Letters is a northeast style pale ale. I don't even know what that means.
Well, there's a Papyrus Iris, which is a northeast style.
IPA. Those are the cloudy ones. They don't have that on tap right now. They did want me to mention that Wednesday, actually the day that this episode is released, is the can release for Papyrus Iris. So come down to Ruse and get a six pack and take it on the river this weekend.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, it'll be good. You'll like it. I had that last week when I stopped by, and it was delicious.
Yes, and I'm a big fan of any kind of like Egyptian references. I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. So well done on this place.
Yeah, this is the Turquoise Mountain Sunrise. It's a pineapple farmhouse ale.
That's what I'm trying here.
Yeah, it says it's a Brett barrel aged golden ale conditioned with pineapple puree. It's really tasty. It's a little fruity for my taste.
That's what I was going to say. I think this is a really wonderful drink if you enjoy drinks that taste like this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is like a well-crafted thing. That's not what I choose to drink.
This
like, I don't like ciders.
And if you are dating a woman who really likes pink rosé.
Yes.
Or what do they call it? Yeah, like, you know, pink wines that are sweet. Or if she really likes pina coladas, or if you like really, really like pina coladas.
Or getting caught in the rain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
This would be a perfect beer for that. It's really delicious, but it's totally like it's a mom beer. Like, mom's probably love it.
No, it tastes like pineapple cider, you know, in the way that apple cider is apple-y, that's pineapple-y, and that would be delicious. And I love pineapples. I don't need fizzy stuff and alcohol to eat my pineapple.
You know what? Little kids would love this beer.
Yes, true.
So if you are in the middle of, like, teaching your small child how to drink, which we don't advocate. But
no, I do.
What do we know about children?
Yeah. No, I advocate it. Yeah. Everybody should teach their children how to drink.
Okay, and then I'm going to try this one, which is, this sounds really interesting, the Briar Run. It's a raspberry and blackberry farmhouse ale. It's oak-aged, conditioned with raspberries and blackberries, which means that the raspberries and blackberries weren't part of the fermentation, but they basically made a farmhouse ale, poured it into barrels on top of raspberries and blackberries.
That's interesting.
So that sounds really interesting to me. Oh my god, it smells incredible.
Oh, it does smell really good.
Oh shit, see? That is great. It's so dry. Like, you feel like how...
Oh, yeah.
How it kind of like sucks the moisture out of your mouth after the beer's gone.
Oh, that's much better than it has any right to be. I don't want berries anywhere near my beer, but goddamn, that's very good.
This is incredible. Yeah. Like, the raspberries and blackberries like add this like great tartness to it. Like the whole thing. It's not overly sweet. It's got... Yeah, that's...
Yeah, good job, guys. Yeah.
That's like Ooh. If I was rating this on some stars, if I was going to give it stars, I'd probably give that 4 out of 5 stars.
Yeah.
That was great. That's a great beer.
Yeah, that's... Wow. Yeah, I'm very impressed by that. Generally, again, fruits and berries anywhere near a beer just makes me a little awkward, but geez, that's quite tasty.
I have the same feeling. Like, I frequently want to avoid fruit in beer, but... And in fact, when I was looking at this one on the board, I was like, oh, man, I really want to try a selection of their beers, but I don't want to try a berry beer. So I got it reluctantly, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah, well done.
And this one I'm pretty excited about. It's the Mechanical Mind, the West Coast-style double IPA. It's burly, and listen to this, aggressively hopped with Mosaic, Cashmere, and Simcoe. Brewed for our friend Conrad Andrus, brewer at Culmination Brewing. I like Culmination. They're a good brewery. And it says it's brewed for him, but not with him, so I guess it's not a collaboration. It must just be a tribute beer. I don't know what this... I'll have to look that up and see. That's good. I don't feel like that's super hoppy. I mean, there's hops, but... It's not really punching me in the face with them.
In that we're at the place, I'll just say, not to my palate.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I was expecting something a little punchier, but I feel like it's got a great malt character to it. So, like, the sweetness is great. I just want the hops to be a little more forward and a little more, like, kicky in the face. But, yeah, it's not a bad beer. It's a medium beer.
they seem like nice people, so
I think
I've made my point.
Well, you know, people, I feel like it's better to be honest about the beer than...
Okay, that tastes like Colt 45. Yeah, that's gross.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, no, it's not gross.
I guess it tastes
like if craft brewers made a Colt 45. Like, it's
I mean, I've never had Colt 45, so I don't actually know what it tastes like.
I mean, I don't know that anybody else would make that comparison, but I think you take one swill and then one swill and go, oh, I think I know what he's talking about. Like, it's almost like a distant cousin thing where it's like, maybe I could see it a little in the jawline sort of deal.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, like I said, I don't taste the hops in there the way I want to.
Oh, no.
I really want, like, with a double IPA, you know, I mean, I know that a lot of times a double IPA means just double the grain bill, but a lot of times it also means double the hops. So you get something that's kind of over the top and unbalanced. It's going to be too boozy, too sweet, and too hoppy. But this is less hoppy than a strong ale would be. I want more hops.
It honestly tastes a little skunk. Like,
really? Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, skunk usually comes from hops, so that's good.
No, but I mean, like if you're having, you know, like you wake up at the party and you're like, oh, I'm so hungover, I'm just going to drink this beer that's been sitting out all night. There's a bit of that, like that kind of skunked.
I wish I didn't know that feeling.
I do have to say, that hides 8.5% very well.
It does.
That does not taste like an 8.5.
And that's a good technique. That's a good skill to have. Yeah. To be able to...
Yeah, I'm looking at the little cheat sheet of beers here, and yeah, they're all a lot more alcoholic than I would have thought, which is, yeah, that's really well done. That's well crafted.
Good thing we walked. Hey, did you walk?
No. I ran late because I was curled up in my bed.
Oh.
So I drove.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing well.
It's cool, you know. I mean, you know, you'll microdose again, and everything.
I hope so.
The clouds will part. So, can you microdose with LSD? Have you tried that?
I have a dose in me right now.
Oh,
It doesn't work as well. It's helpful, but it's more of a. So microdosing, when it got its start, at least the kind of popularization was from Silicon Valley, and it was people doing it with LSD.
Yeah,
and it's like. ADD med.
Okay.
What's the ADD med people take for fun?
There's Ritalin and then Adderall.
Adderall is what I'm thinking of. People compare it to Adderall.
Okay.
That you're focused, you can get things done. It's Silicon Valley people that, like, need to work, you know, really concentrate for longer hours than the brain's supposed to.
Yeah.
That's where that comes from. It's very good. It's helpful for me. Like, but it's not...
It doesn't do the same.
No, it's... Yeah, I mean, really, the only reason I'm keeping it up is because I bought LSD, so now I just have some tabs sitting there. I'm like, I guess I should just microdose.
Then how much? So you have like blotter paper tabs?
Paper tabs that are 100 micrograms.
And how do you cut them up?
You drop it in vodka, or you can use distilled water.
Okay.
And then you just mix it up, and then I have a little syringe. You pull out 10 milliliters, so it'd be 1/10 of, so it's 10 micrograms.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Which is where I got the microgram confusion, because acid works that way. Mushrooms don't.
Yeah. LSD has a really, really low effective dosage compared to, like, any other drug on the planet.
Yeah, that's where my confusion earlier came from, because I normally do the mushrooms, but I was just recently made a batch of the acid-based ones. Yeah, so you just, I bought these little cooking syringes, and then you just pull it into a little plunger, and I put it in a dumb shot glass, shoot it back in the morning, and yeah, it's helpful. I not that I'm not recommending it, but...
it's just not the same.
Yeah, for me, it's not really there. I think it's more of a kind of, if you want to get stuff done, you know, you know, for, you know, if you're neurotypical, but you want to, you know, get a lot of... I don't know, woodworking done, or what? I don't know what regular people do.
I don't know what neurotypical people do either. I might be neurotypical, but I can't... But I probably am not. I mean, you know, I'm an occultist. I don't think occultists are neurotypical people.
Yeah, this is a lot of truth you're speaking. I don't really even like the term neurotypical, but because...
People who don't struggle with life.
Yeah. Well, but you can't say that. You know,
I mean, everybody has their struggles, but there are some people who spend a lot of time struggling man versus himself, you know, like that style of struggle where your main obstacles are ones that exist within you instead of ones that exist in the outside world, yeah. perhaps? Like, I don't know.
No,
this
is a very good, this is a great way to explain it, because people often, when asked about, so a lot of people don't understand depression at all.
Yeah.
And that's great for them.
I feel like I'm going to say that I don't understand depression at all.
So, but people do understand, oh, well, you know, one time I whatever died or whatever, mm-hmm. and I was super depressed. So it's hard to kind of, those aren't the same.
Right, like, because in that case, like, that's grieving.
Yeah.
And you have something that is a definite cause, it's, and you're yeah. definitely reacting to something.
Like, but, oh, I would love a reason that I was
yeah.
depressed, because then there's something to fight against.
But instead it's just,
it's
like...
My mind doesn't produce the right, you know, combination of neural synapses or whatever's gone wrong in the building of my brain. And lots of stuff happened right. Like, I have a good memory, I'm reasonably smart, like, lots of goodness. But that, the feeling good about stuff section, uh-huh. just, you know, they
switched up.
Yeah, they used all the spackle in the, you know, remembering stuff about, you know, 1980s Voltron cartoons. That section is good.
Did we talk about the new Voltron?
No, we didn't.
I mean,
maybe we did.
This is totally like an Alex Cass sort of subject, but I'm okay talking about it now. But
also, talking about one thing, getting completely side-railed by something completely silly is a very Alex Cass way to do things.
Well, yeah. so there's this new Voltron cartoon. Voltron, what is it? Ultimate Defender or Legendary Defender.
I think that's the name of it.
It's on Netflix, and it's freaking incredible. Like, it's got a storyline.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to make of it. It's been on since 2016, so it's been going for like 2 years.
Have you watched all of it yet?
I haven't watched all of it. I've watched up through probably like season 4 or something. Like, Lothar has come back, and
okay.
they're fighting. Lothar's come back, and the evil Emperor Zarkon
yeah.
is back now too. And the rebels have like had their first great victory, and they've taken back a significant chunk of the Galra Empire. But it's just like, it's really engaging. It's got great characters, and I'm really enjoying it. And even better, you know, we were talking about kids earlier. I'm going to talk about kids again. My nibblings, my little brother's kids, who are 5 and 9, love it. So when yeah. I go over to his house, in order to like calm kids down, you know, you don't give them whiskey anymore. Instead, you give them cartoons, and they want to watch Voltron. It's friggin' brilliant.
Yeah.
I love it.
I would have loved that, because as somebody that writes stories often,
mm-hmm.
It's miraculous I know how to tell a story, given the cartoons I grew up on, where it's just,
yeah,
the bad guy's over there, let's shoot near them, rinse, wash, you know, it's just...
Yeah, because there's killing on Voltron. I mean, a lot of the bad guys are robots. But there are good guys, there are bad guys yeah. and good guys that get killed.
Well, and there's storytelling, which is the main thing.
There's storytelling, too, yeah.
You know, when I grew up, like, the Voltron was... A bad guy came from space. Let's form Voltron. Hit him with our sword. Maybe there's a two-parter where in the second part you beat them with your sword. You know, so you know. But you know,
right.
now this is like, you know, full story arcs, which I love modern TV for that. Is that
yeah.
they've adopted the like long-form storytelling.
And I think there are a lot of cartoons where they've accepted the fact that like, okay, we want to make something that kids and their parents can watch together. So there'll be like, it'll be all flashy animation and. You know, crazy characters and stuff to entertain the kids while at the same time having like an adult storyline
yeah.
or like a grown-up plot that grown-ups can follow along with and be like, oh, what's going to happen next? And I appreciate that a lot. And probably the best example of that, and maybe like the shining example of cartoons in our lifetime, is Adventure Time.
I adore Adventure Time.
Adventure Time is so brilliant.
So
actually... Wizards in Adventure Time are based on madness and sadness.
Yeah, so this is something, I'm glad to bring this up. Long story short, I've had these kind of waveforms of getting slightly better, mm-hmm. getting worse, microdosing, which was the main one. But so I was at very near my bottom, like just every day panicking, super depressed. It was really, really bad.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I happened to find Adventure Time. And it could not have come at a better moment. Mm. And I was like, oh, this is just magical. And I found this website that streams all of them.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just like, it was just a few days of like, oh, this is so comforting. And like, all I need is comfort right now. And it's just like this perfect thing. And then BMO starts making more appearances. And
yeah.
I believe BMO to be the greatest character ever made. Falstaff can suck us, Falstaff. BMO is the greatest character ever made.
BMO's pretty great, but you know what? I kind of like the Ice King and Marceline and their story.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant. And especially with Betty, is that the name of
Betty
the...
Betty is, yeah, Simon's ex-girlfriend.
Simon's ex-girlfriend, who at some point gets the Magic Man's hat.
Yes.
And I think actually the last episode that I've seen of Adventure Time, you know, all this stuff happens where Finn and Jake have to, like, fix the elemental issues in the kingdom, and at the end of it, Betty? Or somebody... The one who has the Magic Man's hat is transported to Mars.
Oh, yeah.
With the actual Magic Man.
Who is normal man now.
Who's normal man now. Yeah. Sitting over here being
great.
Like, this is going to be trouble.
Yeah. The show's so good. No, you're right, of course. The Betty Ice King Marceline storyline is, of course, about...
And it's like 1,000 years
long. I literally cried when he started singing the Cheers theme to her, because what a heartstring pulling episode.
Yeah.
The reason I say theme, though, is it just... It turns out I have a thing for, like, old lady Korean accents. Because apparently that's what the BMO accent is. And uh-huh. I'm like, oh, you could say anything. And I just adore BMO. You've been to the outset studio.
Yeah.
BMO is sitting on the table there. Mm-hmm. And there's a little... I bought a...
A BMO?
A BMO as a full adult. Like, I'm in my 30s. And I went to Amazon and bought a BMO.
You know what? I feel like you could probably... do like a Raspberry Pi or Arduino-based BMO video game thing.
Yeah, there's this guy made one and gave it to Penn Ward, the guy that makes Adventure Time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a full interactive BMO that took clips from the shows, but you can talk to it. You're mm-hmm. like, hey, BMO, what's up? Hi, you know, I don't know. Today is a great day. I'm looking in mirror. Oh, no, it is football. Football is bad. But, it's interactive, like really rudimentary AI, you
Your
know, back
old
and forth.
Lady Korean accent sounds kind of like a Mexican accent.
Well, here's the thing. I was just trying to rush through it because in no way was I going to get it right. And if it did, it would come across as very racist.
Yeah,
so I just figured I would just push through. You understand, an accent was meant to be here.
Okay.
But yeah, but you can say to BMO, hey, BMO, I'd like to play a game. And BMO would go, great. And then its screen turns into a game and you can actually use the buttons on BMO's body to play, you know, like a Game Boy style game. Yeah, it's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The guy sells the kits or uh-huh. tells you how to make the kits online.
Uh-huh. Huh. That might be worth looking into. Okay. This is the last beer that I picked out. This is Grizzly Menace Rum and Chocolate. It's a rum barrel-aged robust porter brewed with coffee, chocolate. Oh, copious amounts of chocolate, and aged in rum barrels.
Ooh.
I'm very excited about this one. When I saw it on the board, like, strong... over-the-top barrel-aged imperial stouts are among my favorite style of beer. Like, I just love that kind of, like...
We're ready to kick out.
We know it's super nice out here, but the old CC doesn't let us drink in the hallway.
All right. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, I guess we'll move.
It was a nice run while it lasted.
My Alchemical Bromance is sponsored by Miskatonic Books. Miskatonic Books is an online bookstore that focuses on rare, limited edition, and custom-made books of the highest quality. They specialize in books on the occult, ceremonial magic, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, Hermeticism, and other topics of interest to you, our listeners. Check them out on the web at miskatonicbooks.com. It's live.
All right.
So this is going to be a little confusing if you're out there in the audience because, first of all, there's background noise now, and second of all, we've switched sides. We're on different channels.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
It's okay. Nobody will care.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't think anybody listens.
Well, I mean, do you edit it so that it's in stereo, equal ears? Oh, you totally should, though, because that's really irritating. Because I only listen to podcasts in one ear.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I could. I should probably do that. I should probably make it mono.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, like, they actually teach you that in, like, safety classes, that if you're walking through a neighborhood you don't know, have at least one earbud out. They say take out both, but at least
okay,
one
well,
out.
Okay, well, that's good yeah. feedback, and I will totally change it so that both people are in both ears.
Yeah.
In which case, people at home will not feel any level of confusion.
Yeah, use my expertise. I'm a grizzled old veteran of these podcast wars.
Yeah, that's true. Hold on. Let's talk about this beer first. We got cut off before we got to talk about the Grizzly Menace Rum and Chocolate. We didn't even taste it yet. Oh my god, it smells like iced coffee.
Ooh.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, 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 yes. That's the style of beer I like.
Yeah, it's really good.
It is hot. It is oaky. It is super chocolatey and coffee-y. Like, there's a ton of shit going on in there.
Yeah. I really like how the coffee kind of hits late. Like,
yeah.
It starts chocolate and then kind of ends coffee, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah,
really,
yeah.
I like that, yeah.
And there's a sweetness that kind of runs through it. Like, this kind of, like, residual... It's not caramel. It's... molasses. It's like a residual molasses sweetness that kind of hangs out.
Well, it's
out
like
there's
rum barrels, right?
Oh, yeah. Which is made out of... Okay, that totally makes sense. It's made from molasses.
Yeah.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah. Well done, Grizzly Menace Rum. And I mean, it's an awful name, but really good beer.
I kind of like Grizzly Menace.
No, that's fine. It's just all the other words afterwards.
Grizzly Menace Rum and Chocolate.
Yeah. If you need to conjoin parts of your beer, Dave, let's...
Yeah, I would say just calling it Grizzly Menace Stout.
Perfect.
Or Grizzly Menace Porter would have been great.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you can figure out the rest just for tasting it.
Yeah.
But that's really tasty. That's a really intense beer. This would be a great after-dinner beer, I'd say any time of the year. But like right now, since it's the middle of summer, I would say get some of this, do a barbecue, and afterwards when you're sitting around all full and maybe there's a bonfire, there should probably be a bonfire.
Yeah, probably.
You sip this and maybe have a cigar.
Yeah, I think that is the same time of day and situation in which cigar smoking is appropriate.
Yeah.
This would be appropriate.
This is a cigar.
I mean, basically just treat that like a porter. Anywhere you have a porter or a, you know, any of those kind of deeper, you know.
Man, this might be my favorite. Do you want to chug the rest of it?
No, you go ahead.
Okay.
It is thick chocolate beers and warm weather don't mix to me, but it's absolutely delicious. Like,
I agree, they do not mix,
yeah.
But sometimes they're also kind of irresistible.
Yeah, I don't do well with heat, so it's just any kind of warmth,
meat.
It's just like most of my senses just start breaking down. It's just, I need yellowy beer, that's the...
I totally know how you feel about heat. Like, the heat really, really bugs me. But, I mean, what can you do? We live in Oregon. And thanks to global warming, summers keep getting worse.
Yeah. I mean, when I moved here, it was kind of great. And now it's stupid global warming caught up with me. I have to move, like, north more. Just eventually going to live in Alaska.
There's that song, Johnny Horton, North to Alaska. Go north, the rush is on.
Oh, yeah. I'm on it. Yeah.
All right, so let's see. We were just talking about Adventure Time, and then when we were moving, we talked a little bit about Steven Universe, which is another really good one of those cartoons. But I don't know if it has as much, like, occult undertone.
No, not at
but
all.
But there's still, like, an interesting... I think one of the things that's really fascinating about Steven Universe, like you were saying, like, they do talk about gender identity, but there's also, like, this species identity, where the more you learn about the gems, the more you learn that, like, for them, the whole concept of being an individual is alien and weird, right? Like the rest of the gems that they encounter don't even understand it. Like, nobody understands that the characters in the Steven Universe that are the gems are unique because they differentiate themselves and make their own decisions and aren't part of this, like, weird hierarchy. It's almost like you get the idea that gems are driven by just sort of this need to expand and make everything into a gem.
Yeah, well, that's the idea.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so it's great for, like, kind of younger people, you know, it's just celebrating the, like, kind of individual differences. Like, one of the characters is, you know, a flawed version, and that's what makes her the one that's on the team, you know?
Yeah.
I can't remember her name, the bouncy round one.
Ruby? No. Amethyst.
Is that it, Amethyst?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Isn't she the...
Yeah, Amethyst. Yeah, because Amethyst,
with
Garnet, and
Pearl.
Pearl, yeah.
Yeah,
and she's literally a bad version of an Amethyst, and that's what makes her unique, which is there's a brilliant follow-up on a depression discussion is,
yeah.
Hey, look, the sometimes the flaws will make you the thing that, you know, you're the lead character in a story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, I feel like that's one of the things about mental disease, mental illness in general, is that a lot of times it's a it's a point of uniqueness that kind of, I mean, it does create your personality in a lot of ways, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, it certainly is it's an interesting kind of dynamic that happens, especially like growing up with like mental illness or whatever, where in depression is one of the weird ones. It usually happens like kind of post-pubescence. Like, uh-huh. There's not a lot of depressed little kids. I mean, until recently where they started prescribing far more medication to children than they should. But historically, depression has been a post-pubescence thing. So it's like you're sort of well-formed, so you kind of know who you are, but also it like informs all of your, like, I mean, I think without depression, like...
How's everything going?
Good, the other bartender kicked us out. Kicked us in.
She's way meaner than I am.
Well, you know what? That's cool. Like, you need a good cop, bad cop sort of thing with bartenders.
Yeah, I mean, just without depression, I mean, you wouldn't have a lot of good writing and movies. And,
yeah. Do you feel like, does your depression fuel your writing at all? Does it help your writing, or does it like give you inspiration? Is it a mixed bag?
I think historically it has. Like, when you're young and depression is still kind of sexy, which is weird, you know, because you're like the tortured artist. But as you know, as you age, it's less sexy. It's more real. You know, it's, you know, as you start slouching a little bit, as the belly starts distending, you know, as age catches, it's not sexy depression. Now it's like, oh, this is the long trudge style depression. And a lot of depressed people talk about this, where there is this weird like kind of switchover that happens. And now, like...
Because when you're young, you're like the brooding artist.
Exactly.
With the black trench coat and the cloaked cigarettes.
Which I had.
And the Hot Topic t-shirts. Yep. And you're like...
and so it's kind of it does fuel in a way, but I think at a certain point you switch over to, like, it fuels while you're kind of honing your writing skills, like honing your craft and like kind of what you want to write. And then at a certain, like, right now, I just want depression to be gone so I can just get on the business of being a writer.
Yeah.
Where it used to be, like, I can write about depression, kind of, like, live with it. It's like, that story's, I've already told those stories, you know? Like, now it's kind of, well, you know, where do you move from here? And where do you move from here is, like, this desire for a clear mind so you can, like, I would love to know what me, like, 3 years with a completely depression-free head. I'm very curious as to what I'm going to write. Like, I'm looking forward to it, to see, like, what comes out. Because, like, I don't know what he writes like, you know?
Wait, who?
Me. Like,
oh,
I don't know.
You mean...
I don't know what a depression-free Alex writes like. I don't know what a few years in a row does to me writing-wise, like, creativity-wise. Like, I haven't had it as an adult. So, like, I'm... You know, if I can find a way to kind of, you know, going back to microdosing, if I can find a steady source and keep on a regimen and, like, everything works out and it can kind of feel, you know, symptom-free for a long period of time, I'm very curious to see, like, what work that person produces, you know, what a depression-free Alex can produce.
I'd like to see that, too. We'll find out.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well,
yeah.
I'm wondering, like, so you've done a lot of chaos magic. Right,
yeah.
Like, you practice chaos magic.
Yeah.
Does any part of chaos magic involve, like, a daily practice? Like, you know, every day you meditate and do the lesser banishing ritual or anything of that nature? Like, is there a daily practice element to chaos magic?
Well, I mean, the answer is simultaneously yes and no. The entire point of chaos magic is there is no thing called chaos magic.
Yeah, right.
There's no rote ritual, which is part of the reason that I stopped reading about it, is because people started to, like, start say things like, oh, that's not a chaos magic work, or that's not how you make a sigil. And it's like, do you not get the entire point of this? Like, you should just go back to old school ritualistic magic. That's what you want then.
Yeah.
Like, cause that's why I went more towards, like, the chaos magic side. Is I find ritualistic magic, for me, boring. Like, I find it fascinating. Like, I could talk to you about it forever.
Uh-huh.
I never want to do it. But, like, it seems like a trudge. Like, it seems like homework. But, like, the chaos magic is raw. The kind of raw, like, when we first started inventing magic, that's what chaos magic feels like. Like, when
I
we were, like, Neanderthals writing
out. I think that that's true.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's actually something that I learned from one of my John Michael Greer, who I consider one of my teachers, mainly because he taught me a ton of stuff when he was my neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my favorite breakthrough story is, like, John Michael and I were sitting, working through Agrippa and the Golden Dawn stuff at the same time, trying to work out how to do a planetary talisman. And I was like, well, there's nothing in here about how this works and how this works. He's like, well, make it up. I'm like, what do you mean make it up? Isn't there like ritual for this? He's like, no, you make it up. Somebody made all this shit up eventually. It's all chaos magic when you get down to it. And I was like, oh, and my head exploded.
It's the whole thing of like, it goes back to like shamanistic magic where it's just, all we are is, we're trying to talk ourselves into adjusting the universe, which we don't believe we can do. So we have to find some way to talk ourselves into it. So if it involves a ceremonial dagger, banishing rituals, involves drawing all sorts of shit in the air with your ceremonial dagger, if it involves X number of candles over X things, when something is aligned with the other thing, and when Mars is in recession, that's when it works. That has nothing to do with it being effective. What it has to do with effective is that you believe that's effective. And that's why the universe can change, because you're the viewer of the universe, therefore the creator of the universe. If you believe it's changed, it's changed. I just would prefer a shortcut, you know, because that's a lot of stuff to remember for what I now believe to be intrinsically just kind of, it's just kind of gussied up psychic, you know, like it's...
So here, the reason that I was asking about like the daily practice is I was wondering if having like a daily meditation practice or a daily ritual practice did anything to help like control the symptoms of depression or control the effects of depression. Like, have you tried that? Do you know
it?
I
have attempted it, but one of the kind of it's almost hard to describe. But like, when you get it, so the whole kind of depression thing is, a lot of it is kind of your inability to do stuff in a way that you can't describe. It's almost like trying to describe writer's block. So like,
it's almost like your will is sapped then. So
I was in a daily meditation practice for a long time. Like, I still meditate pretty frequently, but like I was like daily, if not at least, you know, five times a week, like pretty significant amount of the week I did it, some kind of meditation. And then as I was getting more depressed, like I kind of, you know, was going into like a low, and I thought, oh, this will help my depression, almost immediately. I didn't want to do it anymore. And it's not like I didn't want to. It's just like now the energy. Yeah, it's just this weird. It's almost like if I was interested in something in, let's say, if I was interested in a topic in when you're in high school, you're like, oh, I want to read about this. The second you have a quiz on, you're like, ah, fuck that shit. I don't want to read about that nonsense. Where it's just your brain kind of just doesn't. It's so, like, oh, that could provide me comfort. So whatever that switches your brain goes, no, fuck that. Turn that thing off. Like, it's the self-sabotaging mechanism of depression.
That's interesting, though, like the, that you were in the middle of a meditation practice when the depression kicked in, or when the depression got stronger.
Yeah, kicked back in.
That's actually just sort of saying, like, no, a regular meditation practice is not going to directly help you with this.
For me. But I know people that, it helped them immensely. I know people that yoga helped immensely. Like, yoga does nothing for me. Yoga to me feels like, yoga just feels like gussied up meditation,
stretching.
Which what it is.
It's stretching and meditating at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. It's like, yoga, as we understand it in the West, is just one part of an ancient Indian tradition. And literally, the only reason they stretch so much is so they can meditate longer. That's where yoga came from. It's so your body is limber enough so you can go into this, like, that, like, really deep meditation thing where you can starve yourself for days on end and sit in full lotus for days on end. That's the beginning of yoga. But now here, it's like, that's the beginning, middle, and end of yoga. So I'm not cheating on yoga. It's just like,
no, I mean, you're right though. Like, there's so much shit to yoga, and including like lots of stuff that we don't even have access to in the West yet, or maybe some people do, but it's not like, if you go take your yoga class or you go do goat yoga or whatever, you're not getting access to like the spiritual side of it.
Yeah.
Or, like, I mean, there's a whole branch of yoga that doesn't even involve stretching at all.
No, I mean, that's the thing is, that's yoga we refer to as a yoga. Like, yoga is a practice. So there's like I think the one that we use, is it pranayama yoga? Is that the one that
pranayama is breathing?
It's breathing. So there's breathing yoga and then stretch yoga, and then there's
hatha yoga is like the one that everybody practices. Well, hatha yoga includes, I think pranayama is a technique.
Yeah,
that goes across.
Yeah.
Different.
So, but there's like four different things. So there's like meditation in the body, which is pranayama and hatha. And then there's literally like reading from books is a yoga. Like teaching is a yoga. Like, yoga is like teaching. Like, it's, there's thinking yogas. There's you know, there's
apparently some kind of yoga that's very much like Western ceremonial magic called Raja yoga too.
That sounds vaguely familiar, but I didn't have
Ratha yoga, maybe? But I don't know.
I know there's like...
I'm going to sound like a yoga idiot on the internet now.
Well, no. If we're in the West, just by you being aware that yoga in the West isn't yoga, we're... already exponentially above like the girls in very nice pants that we walk by frequently.
You know, yoga pants are the best thing that yoga has introduced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I it's the one positive to yoga, and I would never banish it from the country. It's the same people that would bitch about cultural appropriation, yeah. And then they go to their yoga class, and it's like, do you not see the intrinsic problem here? It's like, literally, you stole a bit of the culture and completely whiteified it, and it's like yelling about cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, so there's like, I think there's like starvation yoga is another one. Like, you know, the sadhus that like hold their hand above the head for like until their hand withers. Like, uh-huh. That's a yoga. Like, there's, yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to have to find some yoga experts to talk to.
You should. I would love to listen to that because, like, yeah. This is me kind of reading random shit, like, kind of while reading other things about India, finding this stuff out. Like, I love Indian, like, kind of religious belief. Like, I love their stories. Uh-huh. So, like, on the side, you're like, oh, and that's how yoga works. So, like, these little stories of, like, a sadhu that did this. Where it's like, so I sort of know, but it's kind of like in my, not to, you know, cheap plug, but it's in my periphery of what I'm interested in Indian uh-huh. kind of thought. So it's like kind of on the side of my eye. It's like, why is that guy with his hand over his head? Oh, he's trying to, you know, show penance to blah, blah, blah. But penance is a long word. That's a very Western word, but I don't know what they call it. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, they do. It's not penance. It's they're basically you gain like kind of religious points.
Well, it's not penance. It's devotion. It's like proving devotion or showing.
Devotion is the wrong word too. It's like if there's a video game, your spiritual points go up the longer you can hold your hand over your head. So you get like it's XP. Spiritual version
for like it's spiritual planking.
Yeah, so okay. The longer you can plank, the more XP you get, and then you're more religious. It's interesting, but again, these are things that have been completely translated and described to me in random books. So, but I mean, that's my understanding of it, and it seems like that would make a fair amount of sense.
Yeah, I have to think about that for a little while now. Anyhow,
there is a term for it. I just don't remember it. Like that, the thing they're building up is uh-huh. is a thing. Like when it doesn't matter. Yeah, generally there's an Indian term for the spiritual XP that gets built. I don't recall it.
We'll have to look it up and see if we can figure it out. Okay, I think we've recorded a lot now. So
yeah, I think so.
Let's. Why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet, and especially where they can buy your novel, Periphery, which. We didn't really talk about very much, but,
Oh, yeah. On Amazon, my name's Alex Bolin. Alex with two X's, B-O-L-L-E-N.
Two X's, two L's.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's probably going to be on the title of this episode, so I didn't really need to spell that. But, yeah, it's on Amazon. It's called Periphery. I've got a bunch of short stories. Periphery is the most kind of magical realism style one, the one with the most kind of, like, occult references and the magical meanings.
I've read it, and it's a great book. No. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's lots of weird magic-y stuff, and if you're someone that knows about kind of occult and ritual, you'll recognize like a lot of the last days are like a lot of finger on the nose winks to things.
Also, there's a tree that eats people.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, there's a tree that
or
eats people.
Balloons or whatever.
Yeah, it's close enough. But actually, weirdly enough, that comes from an Indian story of a tree that eats people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Apparently, in the Indian wilderness, is a cryptid, I guess you'd call, that it's a tree that will eat you if you go down the wrong path.
Shit.
Yeah, but they believe it's, like, real. It's not like a fairy story. Like, they actually think this is a... Not, It's not, but they, in that area, they actually believe it's a thing. But yeah, that's you can find me. I do a movie podcast called John and Alex Hate Stuff, and I'm restarting a podcast that I've done for many years called The Alex Cast, which Eric has been on a couple times.
Three.
Yeah.
Well, two and a half.
Yeah. Well, the third will come out. I'm just waiting on that. Yeah. For reasons.
Well, we can link to those episodes.
Oh, yeah.
We can cross-link between this episode and that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
We can be like an old GeoCities Ring. Remember Ring websites?
Here at the bottom. I worked for WebRing.
Oh, nice. Really? Oh,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, then look at that. Talk about the Ouroboros completing itself.
Yeah. I know. I think that WebRing just ate itself.
Yeah.
Okay, and then... and then you're on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, the Alex Cast on Twitter... Alex Bolin on Instagram. I'm findable. I'm not internet unsavvy. So if you Google me, all sorts of shit shows up.
Pretty much every Alex with two X's is Alex Bolin.
Well, there's a guy called Alex Castillo in somewhere in Mexico.
That, he has a count. Yeah.
Well, he's some kind of like
he
local
talks
politician.
Like an old Korean lady.
Yeah. Well, yeah, according to me, yeah.
All right, well, thanks. This has been My Alchemical Bromance. You can find us on the web at myalchemicalbromance.com. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. And since you enjoyed this episode so much, and I hope that you go on to one of those and give us like a 5-star rating and a glowing review and all that stuff.
Yeah, what he said. Those are great ideas.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers. I'm not going to be able to do that.